yourself a song to sing and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Okay, greetings, all you 99%ers. A little glitch here. Wasn't sure whether we were on or not. Did not hear on my end the intro music by Springsteen. But, okay, I'm told we are on, and everything is cool. And they'll give me another notice here that everything is cool, hopefully, and we'll just jump into today's show, which is focused on the second quarter GDP, U.S. Gross Domestic Product, releases here that just occurred a couple days ago. So that's the topic today, but that's not the only topic because, boy, this is the week that was when it comes to economic events and developments. The day before we had the GDP release, we had the Federal Reserve Bank, Central Bank here, announce another major increase in interest rates, 75 basis points, which is 0.75%. Well, that was a big event, too, and they are linked, of course, the Fed rate hike and the GDP numbers. I want to talk about why they are linked. Then we even yesterday had an announcement that Joe Manchin has now agreed with Schumer on a bill having to do with climate spending and related concessions, I guess you would call it, to the oil industry. I haven't seen that 725-page document or even summaries of it yet, so I'm not going to really talk about that in great length. We'll talk about that maybe next week when we get to see a little bit better what's going on with that proposal, but it seemed to me from the little bit of summaries over the media I've seen is that Manchin will agree to release some spending on climate change if first the administration agrees to expand drilling and freebies for, guess who? The oil industry, energy industry. So in other words, you don't get to spend anything on climate change unless you really first, and they're linked in that way, first agree to have more drilling offshore, more drilling in public lands, more use of public lands and access, and who knows what else. It's a real interesting piece of legislation, which, of course, the Biden administration is hyping as, oh, now a big deal on climate investment. Well, you know, it seems to me that what's given in one hand for climate investment is, you know, taken back with the other for the oil industries, and they get to choose first. Anyway, that's my initial impression. We'll talk about that some more. The other important piece of legislation just coming down, and it's related to Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan, is a big, big subsidy bill for the semiconductor industries. You know, the Intels, Qualcomms, and all those guys, super profitable guys, by the way, are going to get another $54 billion. Now, in subsidies, and they're not telling you in the media, but on top of that $54 billion, they're getting another $20 billion in tax cuts. So the chip industry is getting $72 billion. Yeah, a bribe, no doubt, to try to bring some of that production they got in Taiwan and elsewhere back to the U.S., you see, because if you're going to prepare for a big fight with the Chinese, you don't want American companies exposed over there in Taiwan, right? So, of course, Nancy Pelosi is going over there to signal U.S. Imperial intentions next to check China here. And then that's all part of the U.S. Tightening the screws on China. Okay, so $72 billion subsidy, but that's not all, because there's another $200 billion, in addition to the $72 billion, $200 billion for subsidies for tech companies' R&D, research and development. As if these people weren't making enough money anyway and couldn't do their own R&D, we got to pay for it, the taxpayer? Yeah. So $272 billion, you know, concession to the tech industries. You think that has something to do with, okay, it's an election year here. Come on, tech companies, big contributors to Democrat Party politics and elections. Open up the coffers here and give us some of it back. Yeah, there's something to do with that, too. Silicon Valley, of course, is, you know, very much in the back pocket of the Democrats. So, two pieces of legislation, very important, that we'll have to talk about more next week. But the later one here about the $272 billion handout, direct subsidy, most of it, and some of it tax cuts to the tech industries, particularly semiconductor industries, that's a done deal. That's going to be signed next week, you see. The other one is for the oil companies and energy companies, you know, we'll see what that is as we clarify it. But enough for the domestic legislation. I want to get back to the main topic here. And that main topic is the U.S. GDP report just came out and the Fed decision of this past week. What's uniting these two events is this public debate going on by policymakers in the administration and outside the administration on what's a recession. In other words, everybody thought, you know, two consecutive quarters of GDP decline was a recession. That's kind of the rule of thumb. And we've had now two consecutive quarters, right? We had a minus 1.6% annual rate contraction in the first quarter of this year. And now the report that just came out says we have another 0.9% contraction in the second quarter. That's two consecutive quarters. Now, the 0.9 is the advanced GDP report, as they call it. There's three reports that come out for a GDP. The advanced one, you know, we just got, I think later in August we will get the second one. The second one tends to change some. And then there's a couple months later, a third one that never changes very much, you know. So this 0.9 is subject to some change. We'll see whether they kind of finesse it and so it comes out positive in the second report or not, or whether it actually comes out worse. But the point is there's two consecutive quarters of decline, which people kind of think, you know, well, that's a recession, right? Well, no. Not right. As I've explained here before, there are two definitions of recession in the U.S. That's one. The other is provided by this group of elite mainstream economists who get invited to this semi-government body called the National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER. It's not every economist can join it. You just can't sign up and join it, right? No, it's by invitation only, and of course, you've got to be a mainstream, a connection economist to actually belong to the NBER. And it's the NBER that decides whether there's been a recession or not. It's not two consecutive quarters. Recession's over, or close to being over, it will say that the recession began, you know, this quarter, this month, this year, and it ended in this quarter, this month, this year. Now, the NBER economists, they don't look at just GDP. They look at other economic indicators. Oh, you know, what's the level of employment and unemployment? You know, the job absent rate, you know, is it being filled? What's the employment, labor force participation rate? You know, what's going on with industrial production? Industrial production is manufacturing and utilities, right? That's industrial production. What's going on in that sector of the economy? What about retail sales, which is half of consumption? What about imports and exports. So in other words, they look at the bigger picture, and you can have a contradiction between what's going on with some of these economic indicators versus GDP. And the decision of the MBR is, quote, the official decision of what causes or whether we're in a recession or not. Now, this is important to know that in every recession since 1947, I think we had 12 or 13 of them, whenever you had two consecutive quarters contraction, what they call a technical recession, it's always been followed, to my knowledge here, by a decision by the NBER in agreement subsequently to the two quarters. In agreement, yeah, we had a recession. So let's keep in mind, you know, it's not as if these two are totally at odds, these two definitions of recession. No, not totally. Whenever we've had the former, that usually comes first, you know, we come up with the latter. But some example of how you can have a digression between these two definitions. For example, in 2001, in the first, I think it was the first quarter of the year, or the second quarter of the year, we had a recession. I think it was the second quarter of the year. We had a contraction of GDP. And then in the third quarter, I may have my quarters a little bit mixed up here. In the third quarter, we had a growth in GDP, and then we had a decline again in the subsequent quarter, or almost a decline in the subsequent quarter. So really only one real clear GDP quarter contraction. But the NBER guys declared, well, that was a recession. So you can have a recession only with only one quarter, right? And then another example, if you take what happened in 2020 when we had the COVID thing impact GDP, remember that? Well, the first quarter of 2020, we had a contraction because COVID hit pretty hard in late February, early March, first 3 months, first quarter. Okay, so we had a contraction. I think it was like 5% annual rate or something like that. And then in the second quarter, we had a big contraction in April and May. 2 months, April and May, big contraction. Several times greater than the first quarter. So we had two consecutive quarters of GDP contraction, and it was pretty big. And the NBER guys came along and said, it was a recession, but it lasted only 2 months, only April and May, the shortest recession we ever had. You believe it? COVID, the way it whacked the economy, it was the shortest recession we ever had. Well, that's what the NBER says. Why? Because the economy stopped contracting in June 2020. It really collapsed in April and May, but it stopped collapsing because it fell so far in April and May. You know, you just can't fall forever. So it stopped contracting in June, and they said, well, that's the end of the recession. We were like 10 to 12% GDP down, contracted. The economy shrunk 10 to 12% total by June, but it was over, according to the NBER. You see, because we have an oxymoron way of defining recessions in the United States. Yeah. We say when the economy stops contracting, it's over. Never mind the fact that you were down 10, 12, 15%, and it's going to take you over a year to get back to where you were in the economy before the whole thing began. Forget the recovery period. Recovery means of the end. They should be defining it as what was the level of the economy when the recession began and contraction began, and the recession is over when you get back to that initial level. But that's not how it's done in the U.S., you see. Yeah, and it allows them to say, oh, the recession's over, even though it takes you a long time to come back. And these recessions are taking longer and longer to come back, by the way. So, you know, that's another interesting thing about the NBER definition and of recession. And, you know, it's not only not GDP, it can end as soon as the contraction stops. So fast forward to where we are today. And you got this public debate going on saying that, look, you know, we are not in a recession yet. That's the, you know, administration. That Biden said that. Powell said that. Jerome Powell, chair of the Fed, you know. Although he was much more qualifying about what, you know, what he meant by that. And, of course, Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, comes out and mimics Biden administration, right, and other pro-Democrat sources say the same thing. And in a way, they're sort of right because Powell and all of them point to the labor markets and say, oh, the labor markets are so robust, are doing so well. You know, the last report here for June was, I think, 300 and some thousand jobs created. As I said before, they weren't created. They were restored from what was lost during COVID. There's no net gain of jobs in the economy going on. It's bringing people back to work going on slowly. Okay. That's what they cited, you know, repeatedly. That's what Powell referenced when he said, and was asked several times, because everyone knew that the GDP was going to come in very weak. Everyone knew that. And they were asking him several times, different Q&A following the Fed rate decision. They were asking him, you know, what do you think if it comes in tomorrow, GDP? The Fed rate announcement was on Wednesday, and GDP came out on Thursday. And so after his announcement and his statement, there's a Q&A session, you know, of Jerome by other economists and media and so forth. And he had been asked several times, you know, does this mean, you know, if it comes out negative tomorrow, GDP second quarter, that we're in a recession? And, you know, he kept saying repeatedly, we think we're not in a recession yet, right? As he says, we think we don't have a recession. We don't have to have a recession. Until we see a very clear weakening of the labor market, right? And we don't see this big softening in the labor market conditions yet. You know, unemployment rates low, 300 plus jobs created, you know, about that average for the last three months. The labor market looks like it's okay. So that's a contrary indicator to the second quarter GDP. Now, he also referenced consumer spending. And we have consumer spending here in the second quarter, increased, right, or did not slow as much as it did in the first quarter. So that's a positive to GDP. You know, you could have two contractions, but if the second one is not as contractionary as the first one, that's considered a positive to GDP growth, right? So, consumer spending on services, and we'll explain, more positive. Our difference between imports and exports improved. And I'll explain what that is. So that was a positive, right? Intellectual property expanded. So these are reasons why, you know, pointing to the labor market, pointing to consumer spending, not as bad, and exports not as bad. Why the Fed and the administration are saying, oh, no, these contrary indicators that the MBER guys would look at do not show the contraction that we see in the general GDP second quarter numbers. Therefore, we are not in a recession yet. In other words, the Fed and everybody else in the administration is really rolling their dice on the labor market, saying, oh, you know, it looks okay to me. You know, unemployment's still less than 4%. How can we be in a recession when unemployment is not contracting? Well, come on, guys. You know, the labor market lags 6 months to what's happening in the economy. We know that. We know the labor market is a lagging indicator. Jobs are a lagging indicator. And we're already beginning to see signs and unemployment claims ticking up and hearing about, oh, the tech sector, you know, has got a hiring freeze and, oh, they're going to have an attrition. They're not going to replace jobs, you know, and the next thing is they're going to lay people off. Okay. So we can see that already creeping into the economy. It's an indication that the labor market is beginning to quiver a little bit here. And with a six-month lag, you know, by the end of the year, early next year, we may see something quite different in the labor market. You think these guys would know, and they do know, that jobs are a lagging indicator, but they're choosing not to talk about that. And they're using the job market as an excuse to reject the second quarter GDP contraction, saying, oh, you know, if the MBER guys looked at it, they would say, well, you know, jobs are still healthy, and even consumer spending is doing okay. Not true. Consumer spending is two-thirds of the economy. Let's look at the second quarter report here, GDP report. What's happening to consumer spending on goods? In other words, things, buying things in stores, etc. You know, that's like 20% of the economy, 80% is services. Well, let's look at things. Here's some numbers, right? In second quarter GDP, it contracted. Goods purchases contracted by 4.4%. That's a pretty big number. In the first quarter, it contracted by 0.3%. And it was positive in fourth quarter last year. So you go from a positive 1.1 fourth quarter to a negative 0.3 first quarter to a negative 4.4. It looks to me as if good spending is going south. People are buying, consumers are spending less and less on goods. Well, that's not a sign that consumer spending is so good. Another sign that's not so good is that we have the lowest reading for consumer confidence, University of Michigan report, the main report, on record. The confidence level in June was 50. That's the lowest ever. I think it ticked up to 51 here, which is just a statistical, you know, noise. In the July number. So consumers are really feeling bad. And they're not buying goods, that's for sure. What about services? Are they buying services? Yeah, to some extent. There is services going on. Let me look at the report here, GDP report, and see what it says. Excuse me. Change from the preceding period. All right, first quarter, second quarter. Let's look at some of these real numbers. These real numbers, okay? Gross domestic product. Table 3 of this report, second quarter GDP report, issued July 28th, yesterday, right? I'm looking at table 3. Gross domestic product, level in change from the preceding period. In other words, from quarter to quarter, okay? Let's look at durable goods. Oh, well, just look at goods. Goods, you know, things are made up of durables. In other words, purchases that you hold for a period of time, and non-durables like food and gasoline and stuff. In other words, you use them up. That's what non-durables are. Non-durable goods. and durable goods, you know, like buying cars and furniture and stuff like that. That's durable goods. Okay, let's look at durable goods over the two quarters, right? Durable goods contracted in the first quarter of this year by minus 4.2%. Durable goods contracted in the second quarter, listen close, by 62.3%. Yeah. These are changed from the preceding period. Okay, that's durable goods. What about non-durable goods? Well, non-durables contracted in the first quarter by 31.8%, but in the second quarter by 47%. Okay? So goods purchases, manufacturing, in other words, is clearly down. And you know, last week, I think it was the beginning of last week, the purchasing managers' indexes, that's company purchasing managers buying things, you know, also turned negative for both goods and services. Both fell below an index number of 50. If the number's below 50, it means there are more purchasing managers reducing their purchases than there are purchasing managers increasing them. And I think both numbers came in around 47. So it is a contraction going on, both in goods and services, by business-level purchasing managers. Yeah. Okay, now services, 80% of the economy, services, first quarter GDP, 62.3. Well, that's a nice increase, right? Second quarter, 85.2. So services are going up. People are buying more services, but they're not buying goods anymore the way they were. But, you know, you got to look within all the categories of services to see where this increase is actually occurring. It's occurring mostly in healthcare. Healthcare declined first quarter 2.5%, but rose in the second quarter 20.8. Okay? So increased spending on healthcare in the second quarter. Also, big increase as well on food services and accommodations. In other words, people are traveling, right? They're eating out and they're traveling. We know that, you know. That's going on as the economy opened. Everyone said, everyone was told, oh, COVID is over. COVID is over. You know, so everyone's out there traveling and getting COVID. Yeah, they're getting BA5 big time. Here's some numbers here on BA5. All right. Hundreds of thousands of people are getting infected every day with Omicron BA5. According to Leslie Cantor today at Rutgers School of Public Health, 140,000 people are hospitalized and 450 a day are dying from Omicron BA5. So that's not gone, but people think it is because the politicians are saying, you know, election year, well, we can't keep all these shutdowns going on the economy and so forth. We did all we could here. We got opened up and take our lumps here in terms of hospitalization and deaths. So everyone's traveling. Not everyone, you know, but lots of folks are traveling now, of course, and healthcare spending is up. Food services and accommodations increased 11% positive in the first quarter and 27.9% in the second quarter. So, you know, big increase going on in those services. Other services are pretty much increasing at the same rate. All of the services, 21% first quarter, 18% second quarter. So, you know, people are traveling, and that's where the spending on services, you know, for hotels and for airlines and for gasoline if you're driving, you know, entertainment, you're going to parks and things like that. And the venues, concerts, stuff, entertainment, it's all opened again. and that's where you got consumption going and increasing in the second quarter, but not in the goods sector. not in the good sector. And to me, that's a very mixed picture for consumers and consumer spending holding up the economy. But, you know, Biden and Powell and the others are thinking that, consumption's not contracting. It may not be growing as fast, but it's still growing. So it's not contracting. And that must be good. Or it's contracting slower, you might say. Yeah, well, you know, if you look at all consumption expenditures, personal consumption expenditures altogether, first quarter it rose 62.8, second quarter 35.8. So the growth is slowing, but it's still growth, you see. It's not contracting. And they're using that to say, oh, well, you know, it looks pretty good. What about business spending, business investment, which is very important because business investment kind of drives the economy. It's not as big as consumer spending, but it's more strategic. You know, it's businesses that hire people and pay wages and provide income and so forth. And business investment is an indicator whether you have expansion going on the business side in GDP. You know, GDP is made up of four main elements here, right? You got consumer spending, two-thirds. You got business spending, business investment, right? You know, that's like 10 to 15%, varies. You got government spending, which is 20, 22%. And then you got what's called net exports, exports minus imports. If you import more than you export, that negative number subtracts from GDP. So, you know, that net exports fourth category can contribute to a GDP contraction if exports rise more slowly than imports rise more rapidly, you see. It's just the difference between the two, also called the trade deficit, translates into a contribution or a negative contribution to GDP. So those four areas, right? We've talked about consumer spending here. You know, to summarize and reiterate once again, still growing, but not as fast. Therefore, still positive contribution, but that's being reduced to GDP. And mostly in certain services due to summer reopening and travel and so forth. You know, and healthcare, it's focused on that. It's not broad-based. It's not everywhere in services we see this going on. And in the good sector, we see a contraction going on. Well, not a contraction, but a definite slowing down. And in some cases, you know, an absolute contraction going on. Okay, so, you know, another, let me digress a little bit before we get on into investment in GDP here. In consumer spending, right, largely driven by two things, and that is, how much disposable income you got. In other words, your wages and your salaries, you know, and you pay your bills and whatever. How much do you have left over to really spend on discretionary items? That's called the disposable personal income, right? And then how much you have in savings. You know, you could spend your savings, right? Not just your regular income that you get from your wages. You could also dip into your savings and finance your consumption, right? That's possible. And, of course, unemployment benefits and so forth that you may get. You could spend using your credit card. You don't have to use your wages. You can spend your wages in the future by taking on debt, right? So there's three ways that consumer spending is driven. It's by, you know, how much wage income you got, how much savings that you got, how much debt and credit you want to take on to finance your spending. Your consumer spending. Well, you know, up till now they've been saying that, oh, you know, households have this massive amount of savings that they've pocketed that they can draw on to continue their spending, their consumption. And that's a sign that the savings and the savings rate is so high that consumers will not start really contributing to a contraction going on in GDP. Well, that's a bit of a myth here, really. Real disposable income is contracting, clearly, and has been. Not as fast here in the last quarter or last month, but nonetheless. And the savings rate is only 5.2%. People are saving, you know, out of their income, only 5%. That's historical average. So this big boost to the savings rate and consumption that they kept talking about because of the COVID relief programs, you know, the checks and all that, supposedly boosted it to 25%. That's all gone. Now, it's only 5%. And most of that's, you know, skewed to the higher end income households anyway. So that's gone. Of course, what about credit? Could consumers spend more on credit? Yeah, except credit's going up, isn't it? The cost of credit's going up. So that's not going to play a role that it used to. Savings isn't playing a role. Credit will play less of a role. Well, what about wages? Well, they say wages are going up. Well, they're going up at the high end, you know, people six figures, professionals, you know, managers, tech kind of jobs, right? And they're going up a little bit at the bottom end as states raise minimum wages, the blue states, right? In the middle, wages aren't going up. You know, the middle class, median families, medium income families, that's not going up. So, you know, where's this pressure for sustained wage and therefore consumption going forward? Where's that coming from? I don't see that. Yeah, people will, you know, load up their credit cards still. And, you know, they'll buy certain things still on credit. They don't have as much savings. And I don't see the wage increases, really, when you look at the big middle. Okay, so what that translates to is where's the consumption driver for a soft landing and no recession going to come from? You know, I don't see it. Okay, we see some spending over the summer, once again, you know, on travel and gasoline and food and so forth. That's going on, and healthcare. But other than that, it's not a positive picture. It's not a collapsing picture yet, but it's not a positive picture yet. But that's been cited by Powell and Biden and others that, the consumers are still spending. How can we be in a recession if the consumers are still spending? You know, how could we be in a recession if we're creating 300,000 jobs a month? Well, it's because we're at the beginning of this whole process. We're at the juncture of the contraction going on. Okay, what about investment? You know, we talked about consumption here, 2/3 of the economy. Yeah, it's slowing. It's still positive, but slowing, right? Jobs, okay, you know, they got jobs. Here, 300,000, mostly just recovering jobs. And we'll see next week where the jobs report comes out for July, actually through the middle of July. These reports aren't to the end of the month, even though they come out in the first week of the following month. They cut off around the 12th or 15th. But we'll see, you know, what's happening with this jobs picture here. I kind of think that part of the reason jobs numbers are as high as they are is because of the way they calculate jobs. I've talked about this before. You know, what you get in the jobs number, this 300,000, is a statistic. It's not the absolute level number of jobs. It's a statistic, meaning it's you take the raw data, the actual number of jobs, and you do a statistical operation on it, you come up with a statistic number, not a raw data number. And the way they do the jobs and they come up with that is they do a survey. They get the number of jobs from this survey, and then they add to it an assumption about new business development based on 6 to 9 months before. How many new businesses were created 6 to 9 months before? And then, of course, that's at least one person, the owner, the new business, and maybe a couple more employees, right? So if you got new businesses creation, in other words, people starting businesses from scratch, very small businesses, consultants and so forth, starting from scratch 6 to 9 months ago, and you add that to the raw data that just came out in your survey last month, and you put it all together, you take this new business numbers and you put it together with the actual survey, and then you do a statistical operation on that, well, whoopee, you come up with 300,000. Because the job creation number 6 to 9 months ago was high. The truth is always in the details here. Anyway, that's my critique of this argument that, employment is so strong, therefore we're not in a recession, right? It's another indicator apart from GDP that the NBER would look like, and it's okay. And then they look at the consumption. Well, consumption's not contracting either. It's growing more slowly, but it's really concentrated in certain limited areas that have to do with opening the economy over the summer travel season. Elsewhere, it's not so great. The numbers. Okay, what about fixed investment? Oh, they're saying in this debate, this counter-argument, they're saying that business investment's doing okay as well. So the consumption sector is doing, not contracting, jobs okay. Investment, looks okay. No, it doesn't look okay. Let's look at what's called gross private domestic investment, right? There's certain categories here. Most important being structures, in other words, buildings, and two categories in buildings or structures. One is residential construction, housing, and commercial construction, commercial property. Commercial property construction, are malls and office buildings and resorts and theme parks, factories, and so forth. That's called commercial construction and residential housing construction. And then another category, apart from structures, is called equipment. Buying of information processing equipment, industrial equipment, trucks and transport equipment, right? PCs and all that kind of stuff, and other kinds of equipment as well. So structures, two kinds, equipment, and then software, and then what's called intellectual property. I want to talk about that a little bit, which is a new category since 2013 in GDP business investment. And then the fourth category is inventories, private inventories. Okay, let's look at this. Look at this investment. Okay, let's look at structures, right? Commercial property, non-residential structure. First quarter, a negative 1%. Second quarter, negative 13.6. Oh, that decline is increasing for business structures. Let's look at residential housing. In other words, we know about it. First quarter, negative 4.7. Second quarter, negative 106.9. Housing construction, new home construction, is collapsing. Why? Because the prices were so damn high before, and now you're raising these interest rates rapidly on top of it to buy a house. So, new home purchases and getting to buy permits, to build homes, that's down. They're all down. All the indicators are down for housing. So that part of business investment, and that was constructing houses is really in free fall. What about commercial property structures? Well, that's declining too. I said, you know, minus 13.6%. And we have a, you know, big change in, oh, excuse me, wrong number, correction here. That number I gave you of minus 106 is, I'm looking at this very table. That's for business inventories, fourth category. Residential housing actually grew first quarter 0.7, but fell second quarter 25.8. Okay, so correct that. If you're taking numbers, we do have a contraction here in the second quarter for residential housing compared to the first quarter, just as we have a contraction in commercial property structures second quarter compared to the first. Inventories are very important because inventories will tell you whether business is going to expand investment or not. Right? If they got all this inventory on hand, they're not going to hire more people. They're probably going to lay some people off until they work off those inventories. That's the number I just said, minus 4.7 first quarter, minus 106.9 in the second quarter. So big inventory accumulation occurring in the second quarter, which does not forebode well for the rest of the year business investment. Right? Now I want to talk about this last category here in investment called intellectual property products, intellectual property, IP. This is something that was created in 2013 to boost business investment numbers contribution to GDP, a new category that was created. And some of these areas are really questionable, you know, like entertainment, literary, artistic originals, right? What's the value of the book you wrote? What's the value of your company logo? What's the value of your trademark? You know, things like that. Well, no one knows. And the government relies on whoever created it, saying, well, what do you think it's worth? And they say, oh, I think it's worth this much. You know, okay, we'll put that number in GDP. And then part of this IP, intellectual property category, is R&D, research and development. It used to be R&D was an expense. In other words, businesses could not call that an investment. It was just the cost of doing business. But in 2013, they added it as an investment category, and now that contributes to GDP. So they boosted GDP in 2013 by about $500 billion a year with these changes in this new category called IP. And then they went back and they smoothed out all the prior numbers they had in their data, and going forward, of course, as well, it's probably more than $500 billion now. That is positive. That is growing quarter to quarter, you know, by around 26 to 31%. It's pretty stable. It's pretty high, and it's growing. Yeah. Well, that makes business investment look better than it is. The other categories are all contracting. I didn't mention equipment here. Equipment first quarter grew 44.1%. Second quarter, negative 9.4. So business spending on equipment, you know, trucks and computers and stuff like that, is now contracting in the second quarter compared to the first. Now, just as structures, both commercial property structures and residential housing structures, are contracting, and inventories contracting big time, the only thing growing is intellectual property as a category of business investment. So I don't think that looks so great going forward with interest rates rising. Yeah, I don't think business investment is going to contribute very much to the growth of GDP in subsequent quarters, just as consumption is slowing as its contributor. What about government spending, right? Federal spending. Well, federal spending, if you look at it, is shrunk 23.2% in the first quarter, quarter to quarter, and the second quarter shrunk 10%. Okay, so it's still contracting, federal, right? But not as much. Well, you know, national defense spending category of federal spending is rising, whereas non-defense spending is falling. As they shift money here, you know, to spend, to replenish, you know, the war goods that they're sending to Europe and Ukraine, right? And preparing to build up against China, right? Defense spending up, you know, but non-defense down, and net still down, government. And state and local government, the same thing. Minus 2.4 in first quarter, minus 5.9 in the second quarter. So, in other words, government, except for war spending, is not contributing to GDP either. Whatever happened to, you know, the $1 trillion that were given to state and local governments here under COVID, they were supposed to spend, you know what they're doing? They're sitting on a lot of it. Yeah, they're sitting on it. Just as they did in 2008-09, except now it's a much bigger magnitude of what they're sitting on. And finally, the fourth quarter, this net export shows the same thing. Actually, it was an improvement here. It contributed positively to GDP because exports grew better in relationship to imports, right? Exports, first quarter were down 29%, up 99% in second quarter. So, you know, if you have a boost in exports, that, all things equal, it's a positive contribution to GDP. And the growth in imports dramatically slowed in the second quarter compared to the first. You know, so in general, the net exports improved in the second quarter and helped GDP. War spending, you know, helped in the second quarter. Intellectual property helped in the second quarter. And spending on travel and food and healthcare contributed in the second quarter. I don't see those categories as sufficient in order to produce a soft landing. Which brings us to the Fed here. Let's now talk to the Fed, you know. The Fed believes that they can engineer a soft landing. Although if you listen to what Jerome Powell said, boy, he really qualified that. He wasn't quite so sure, you know. My takeaways on the Fed and its decision, you know, are the following. First of all, you know, the big debate is, well, gee, you know, does this mean the end of the rapid increases in the Fed spending? I mean, the Fed rate hikes. Well, the stock market believes so. They believe this, this because of what Powell said, that this is the last big increase in rate hikes by the Fed, and the Fed is going to slow its rate hikes here, maybe to 50 or 25, and it'll be over. The rate hikes will be over before Christmas, and next year, because we'll be in a recession, the markets believe, that the Fed will have to start in 2023 reducing interest rates again. So, you know, the stock market looks 6 months ahead and they say, oh, rates are going to come down. There'll be more money here to invest in our superficial securities. Oh, that's good. Let's get in now and let's buy while things are low, buy on the dip, right? And the stock market boomed here after the Fed announcement. Because of that, they think that's going to be slowing again next year, reducing these rates, right? Well, big question is, will it? Will the Fed rate hikes sufficiently reduce inflation to the 2% Fed goal from its current 9-10%, right, in 6 months? Given that a lot of the inflation is supply-side driven and not demand-driven. You know, the Fed can only whack demand and reduce the demand contributions to inflation. It has no influence over supply, you know, has no influence over global oil prices, you know, which are rising again over $100, right? Has no control over the supply chain crises that's still going on. Has no control over political decisions on sanctions on Russia that drive up oil and natural gas and industrial commodities and agricultural commodities. You know, it has no influence over that. Over half of the inflation is due to energy, and the Fed can't do anything about that, you see. Question is, they raise rates enough, you know, will that mean people won't have enough to buy gasoline, you know, to be laid off, to drive less, you know. The Fed rate hikes will take some of the inflation out, but it will not take out the majority, I don't think. I think inflation, no matter how much the Fed raises rates and precipitates a recession, which it will, the inflation because of supply and global forces will remain at least around 4 to 5% going into 2023, even if we have a recession. Okay? Now, certain people like Larry Summers believe this Fed decision was not anywhere near what needs to be in terms of rate increases. Yeah. He says this isn't going to happen. The Fed has to raise even more because the Fed did indicate, Jerome Powell did indicate that, you know, this may be the neutral level, you know, what they call the neutral interest rate, you know, maybe around 3.5%. That's a signal that they're going to start slowing to the markets, and that's the way the markets took it, right? And then he says, Powell says that, we're going to suspend what we call forward guidance. You know, in the past, the Fed would say, okay, this is where we're probably going quarter or Fed meeting to Fed meeting every 6 to 8 weeks in terms of our rate increase. It kind of gave everybody, investors, a hint where Fed rates were going. It's called the dot plot. And he said, no more Fed forward guidance. You know, we're so unsure about where the economy is that we can't give you forward guidance, right? That's significant. What that says is the Fed doesn't have an idea where the hell the economy is right now and where it's going. It's guessing. It's guessing. And he said, we'll take it meeting by meeting. And that was next meeting in September. He has no idea. Right? But he does say it's going to be a soft landing, you know, the jobs look good, consumer spending looks okay, yeah, but it's getting weaker, right? Oh, business was okay, no, it's not, you know? Oh, payrolls, employment is okay, we'll see next week, and we got to look, at least 3 to 6 months down the road for that indicator. The Fed announcement tells me that the policymakers, they're raising rates. They don't know how much they're going to have to raise rates. They don't know whether what they've raised so far is going to precipitate a recession. You know, the economy is damn close, if not already in it. You know, depends if you don't want to buy the 2 consecutive quarters definition or not, then it's not in it yet. But boy, whenever you've had 2 consecutive quarters, you've always had an NBER subsequent decision that, yeah, we're in a recession. Keep that in mind. The two don't diverge historically that much. And we're just at the early phase of this. I've been saying there's going to be a recession since late last quarter. And, 2 consecutive quarters, I think we're in a recession already. I've said that, right? And I don't think if the Fed raises more rates even more, because it won't take out inflation right away or very easily. If it raises rates even more, then that will deepen the recession and bring it even sooner. Right. So this Fed decision and this whole debate, are we or not in a recession, is related to this second quarter GDP numbers, which are an early look of where we are and where we are going. Bottom line, I think the Fed is in trouble, doesn't know what to do exactly. And by the way, foreign central banks have different decisions going on. The Bank of Japan refused to raise rates, and it looks like they were right into the recession. The European Central Bank reluctantly raised rates here. Inflation's even worse over there, going to get worse because of the sanctions. So they're in a quandary. And meanwhile, the Fed continues to raise rates, which drives up the value of the dollar, drives down global currencies elsewhere in the world, causes a deeper recession and inflation elsewhere in emerging markets, you know, countries like Brazil, Argentina, and so forth, Indonesia. Global trading system in currency. About that last week. Anyway, that's my takeaway here today, the Fed decision. You know, they don't know where the hell they're going. A lot of debate whether they're right or wrong. Second quarter GDP, yes, we are in a recession, even though the NBR definition does not say so. And this will all be clarified over the next coming months, I think. But we are in a recession, and more rate hikes are coming. Next week, we'll take up these fiscal bills. $272 billion handout to tech companies and semiconductor companies going on. And the Manchin-Schumer agreement here, should it occur in legislation. So I think we got a signal. We're just about through, and I'm just about through as well. So next week, we will look at these bills, these legislations, and we will keep also next week, we will talk about the employment report comes out on Friday morning. So those will be the big topics next week. But this week, we are at a juncture in the recession and in Fed policy, period. I'm out of here.